Hello, everybody. Welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on March 30th, 2016. My ruler of time here alongside Brother OT. We're going to talk about manga and stuff today.
Yeah. Just manga. Nothing else. No tangents. But
we might sound kind of unusual because Chris is still getting better from being sick. I just woke up. So, we are going to be super alert and cognizant and sound
super
awesome.
High energy. It's going to be all over the place this week.
I'm going to be doing backflips while we do this episode.
I wish I could see that. I will say, Nick, last week I did that whole jelly bean challenge nonsense, etc.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun. Everybody had fun.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, where I threw up trying to brush my teeth because the rotten egg taste just would not go away. And as I'm in the bathroom trying to brush my teeth and then I had to vomit because the egg taste just came up, I like pulled away from the toilet and looked into the bathroom mirror and I'm like, I've become a clown. It was like, it's like the vomit saliva dribbling down my face as my makeup running in the mirror. I'm just like, what have I become?
Like that, like, early 1900s art house music from, you know, artsy films starts playing.
Oh, no, they gave me fucking Lex Luthor's theme song from Batman vs. Superman. I was like, dong, 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 dong. And then he comes in like, perchance to dream, perchance to question. I am the Riddler, but I'm Lex Luthor.
Oh my god. I still haven't seen the movie, and I have absolutely no plans to actually see
it. I'm asking you.
Like that second trailer dropped, the second trailer, which basically tells the whole movie, I was just like, I don't really need to see it now.
Yeah, you don't need to. There's really not much left to be spoiled on. There's just dumber and dumber scenes in the movie for you to be like, this happened?
Maybe someone will eventually make a supercut of all of Luthor's scenes in the movie, and I'll watch that just to be like, oh my god,
so,
what am I doing?
It's hard to express just how much of a weirdo he is. Like, if you're like, the trailer's making him look crazy, there's like a scene of him talking to a senator he's trying to buy kryptonite from. And this isn't really a spoiler, it's just a weird scene he has. And he's like doing a power play, he like goes and reaches and grabs like a Jolly Rancher and eats it. And he's like sitting at a little table because it's like a Facebook kind of like new tech company. So it's like a basketball court's my office.
Right.
So he like pulls out Jolly Rancher and eats it. And he pulls out another one and just pushes it into the other guy's mouth. And the other dude's just like... Like just sits there and does it. Like just lets it fucking get pushed into his mouth. You're like... Is this, like, what is this villain? He's so weird and wacky. And yes, the most dramatic point of the movie revolves around a jar of piss being slowly turned.
I've heard that, too.
It's a terrible movie.
Okay. Batman versus Superman. Reviewed. Next episode.
We've been done. Boom. All right. Credits, everybody. Thanks, Google. Just want to thank all of our Patreons. Steve Mann, title card is...
Something about, what? Bad Reputation World, or whatever the fuck his name is? I don't know. Yeah, we are going to talk about this week's Shonen Jump, and also Fairy Tail. Hopefully next week we're going to be talking about Shinsuke no Iron Maiden. Although, I think I may have forgotten all of that, because it kind of all happened... In one day for me. Like, over the weekend.
You were like, it was dedicated.
No, that's not it. It just kind of went vroom. Anyhow. So we're going to talk about manga. We're going to do the recap portion of Week of Manga Recap. And we're going to kick things off with Black Clover. Last week, we had the sudden revelation that there was a traitor amongst the Magic Knight captains. And then met all of the Magic Knight captains, many of whom we had not seen before. And then they were all brought in before the two captured members of the Midnight Sun in order to have the revelation of who was the traitor. This chapter opens up with the reveal being It's the captain of the Purple Orcas, Gelder Poizat. However the hell you pronounce his name.
Oh, so, it's still on the cover page, though. I get so excited when I see it.
He... One of the guys we had never met before last chapter is apparently the traitor. Okay.
Well, no, because it's still... I mean, look, Nick. We said this last week.
I say it's, apparently.
Yeah, it's probably not... He's probably not the only traitor. I mean, if William Vengeance is, like, a totally upfront and honest dude, I'm gonna be like, well, I'll eat my hat on this one.
Can you imagine, like, he's just there during all the scenes, and they're like, oh my god, the kingdom is under attack by the invading force. We have to do something! Yes, we must protect the citizens. We should move out at once so that no one comes to harm. You're absolutely right! God, you're creepy, though.
They're like, why are you so fucking sinister-looking if you're just a completely honest and good person? Like, sometimes you just look like a snake, and you try to do good things, but you read Angel Densetsu. You should be the one who feels bad about yourself.
He's like, we must protect the village. Soon they'll be near where the orphanages and puppy farms are, and we wouldn't want them to come to harm now, would we?
Wouldn't want that to come to blows.
So, yes, the weird masked guy who is all about financial gain, as introduced in the last chapter, he is apparently the traitor. And I kind of passed over this in the last chapter. His squad is called the Purple Orcas.
It's like fucking Legends of the Hidden Temples come to life.
That's fucking insane, though, to me. Purple Orcas.
Like, there's no... Maybe it's something that makes more sense in Japanese, because I'm like, there's no, like, alliteration with it. Orcas aren't traditionally purple, nor is purple a particularly distinct color. It's not like you're like, I am the red tigers. Like, oh, it's like bloody tigers. It's like,
oh, yeah,
the purple orcas. It's not even a color really associated with money. It's just two very unique things that I feel like perfectly encapsulates him as a Legends of the Hidden Temple gladiator team.
The only thing that I can think of is the fact that is... when I see that, it's like SeaWorld, you know, because orcas and stuff. And maybe he puts giant aquatic mammals in tanks and claims that they're happy, but really he just wants to make money off of them.
Oh, he's like Blackfish.
Yeah.
Oh, that actually makes sense.
It was really awkward. I saw a commercial for SeaWorld the other day, and they're like,
they're like, don't believe the hype.
Well, no, they seriously say, like, yeah, we can't actually release these orcas into the wild because they'll be horribly unprepared for it and die.
That's what the commercial says?
Yes. They flat out say that. But we're going to phase out our shows and there will be no more breeding in there. So this will be the last generation of orcas. So you should come and see them and spend money here.
Wait, this is their commercial?
This is their commercial.
That's some fucked...
Yeah, like...
Wow.
It's such a weird, like, we're doing something, but not really.
It's not even like we're... It's such a weird thing of being like, hey guys, I know that documentary really kind of exposed our really ugly side. And admittedly, it's completely true. We're trying to end it. But not for nothing. These orcas are already here. We can't stop these ones from existing.
We've already done all the damage.
Why not help us wet our beak for this? Like... Why let it go to waste? You're just being wasteful if you don't come to see this now.
We've already ruined them for life, so you should come here and spend money anyway.
Yeah, what's gonna matter? Nothing. They're the same. It's net net gain. It's gonna only positives can happen from here. Apparently, the purple orcas are Shion no Saichi in Japanese, so that sounds a little bit better.
Shion no Saichi. Okay, so maybe a little bit of alliteration, kind of. Alright. So, Gelder objects, of course, to the revelation that he is a traitor by saying this. Ah, no, there's no way that I would actually betray the kingdom. And everyone else is just like, well, you're such a sketchy dude. I mean, look at you. You wear, like, a BDSM opera mask all the time. What the fuck's up with that? And everyone shoots down his objections because they say, we use memory exchange magic for this. You know, we know that this is the truth. So Yami suggests, hey, you know, maybe we could just, you know, use that same magic to just, you know, look inside of your mind. So then if you really are innocent, then, you know, you got nothing to hide. And Gellert is like, I deal with black market practices, so I don't really want to do that. Bye! He doesn't say that in those exact words, but you can pretty clearly tell that he probably has a bunch of secrets completely unrelated to this matter that he doesn't want them finding out about. So he immediately retreats and says, while saying that he's going to clear his name, he suddenly vanishes. And he explained he has transparency magic, so he can vanish. And also all spells that are used against him will not work on him.
So sweet-ass magic.
So Ass hits him with his cleaver. Okay.
Hey, you know, he has key. He knows where he is. Also, I mean, it only makes it visible, right? Like, when his big, fat old feet still make sound. He's like, oh, why did I eat that second Arby's sandwich for the last 7 weeks in a row?
He's like, well, even if you know where I am, you still can't hurt me with your magic. Yeah, but we just have to follow you until it wears off. God damn it!
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so he hits him with his cleaver. It immediately dispels the transparency magic, and then what's his face? The young captain from who was introduced in the last chapter, who's reveals his picture magic. Basically, like, he conjures these sort of colorful ink in the air, and it surrounds Gelder and binds him inside of what looks like a giant painting. Which is pretty cool. I think that power is pretty cool.
It's a cool power. I have slowly reached the point I'm like, so the powers aren't necessarily associated with elements anymore, right? Like, now they can just be whatever. I just want to make sure I'm cool with this. So I'm like, what would picture magic be? Would it be like water? Because paintings are wet. I'm smart.
Oh. But yet this random two-page spread after Real does this, where he's like, you know, if I hadn't done this, then the whole building would have probably been torn down by you guys, because all the other Magic Knights have gotten their various spells ready so that they could go after Gelder anyway. And just a two-page spread of them just, like, with their magic, and it doesn't actually look particularly cool, because you can't see any of their faces.
Well, except for Unzi, Nick. She's sleeping still. She didn't.
Right.
She's just going to sleep.
Right.
I should. Never mind.
Well, also, Vengeance didn't do anything.
Well, that's because Vengeance is the good guy, Nick. He's not going to get involved with this.
I don't want to cause any collateral damage. It hurts if we just start throwing our magic around everywhere.
I think this guy's just always sitting around being sinister in the background. Everyone's like, are you going to get involved, Vengeance? Like, no, I wouldn't want to dirty my hands with something like this. I've got my own plans. And then it's like a shot of him at a bake sale being like, here's your brownie, little girl.
And all the proceeds go to the
orphanage. Make sure to thank your mother for me. Like, okay. This is really weird. I'm a good guy, though.
So all the Magic Knights basically say, yeah, we got our magic ready, because even though spells would go through him, we could just, you know, use our magic on physical objects and hit him that way. So, you know, we were just getting ready for that. But they've already bound him up anyhow, so there's no need to do that. And actually, Vengeance actually speaks on behalf of Gelder.
Yeah, well, that's because he's a good guy, Nick.
He's a good guy.
He's totally a good... Look, Nick, Vengeance is totally a good guy, just in the same way Rebecca is not an important character and will never be coming back again.
He says, that's enough now. Someone may be controlling him with magic.
Yes, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. You know?
I think I'm going to, like... I need to make, like, a segment each week that's just going to be my stone-cold prediction. My stone-cold lock of the century of the week. And I'll be like, William Vengeance is never going to turn out to be evil. Ever.
Real freaks out over Asta, because he's just met Asta, and this is the first time he's seen Asta's magic, so of course he's going to freak out over it, and immediately ask Asta if they can be best friends. This is like the 17th time this has happened in this series, I swear.
He's best friends with these guys now. They're both young. Makes sense.
He's like, I'm real, I'm 19, who are you? I'm Asta, I'm 15. Oh, you're younger than me! Be my friend!
So I'm Nick, it's been a while since I've been 15 or 19, so that might be the way that those children gain friendship, I don't honestly remember.
I certainly never went into someone and was like, I'm 19, I'm 15, then let's be friends!
We have such a strong connection.
Namely our age, sort of.
And I guess our gender. I think. I believe you're a boy.
You never tell with manga. And that's the end of the chapter. Gelder is now held down, and so the Wizard King, flanked by all the Magi Knight captains, bears down on him, and they're going to interrogate him, it seems. That's it. Didn't really care about this chapter.
It's not a chapter. It is what it is. Yeah. At least it wasn't. I'd have been really annoyed if it was like, William Vengeance is the traitor! And he's like, it's me, Least! I've been Least all along! It's like, I've seen you twice! We just went from kicking your ass for like 2 months straight.
I will say this. I think that I would prefer this over them making like a big deal out of it. You know? Better to have, like, here's a new Magi Knight. Oh, he was a traitor. As opposed to, here's a new Magi Knight. He was a traitor! Can you believe that? Oh, you know.
Yeah, so. Someone who we already kind of got the impression was a shithead. It's like, it turns out he's a shithead, just not the shithead they're looking for. Alright, move on to Bleach.
Okay. Bleach, chapter 667. Bigger. Louder. Stronger.
Okay. Is that seriously the name of this title? Why wouldn't you just go harder, better, faster, stronger at that point?
Yeah, seriously, you might as well. I don't know how louder has to do with any of that. Maybe as Gerard gets bigger, he just shouts louder because he's got, I don't know.
Yeah, well, his vocal cords get bigger too.
We are treated to a one-page flashback explaining that, yes, Zaraki did, in fact, come out of that healing pod that he was in. I mean, I always kind of assumed that he did that because he showed up, you know, last chapter and he was healed, but, you know, it's very important we see that he woke up and he came out of the pod. Okay.
He did it.
The other thing I can imagine that the point of this would be is that maybe he came out too early and he's not fully healed? But I don't know.
Yeah, just to show us how bamf this guy is. He's like, fuck you guys. I'll pop out of this stupid medical tank and get there before the rest of you. Yeah.
So, yes. Zaraki's here. And Ikaku and Yumichika end up running onto the scene. They're like, how the hell did he get here before us? He's like, that is a good question, actually. Because he had not been in that pod for very long. He's been in there for 2 fights.
Basically, yeah.
So, Gerard's arm was cut off in the last chapter, and it regenerates in this one. And he's like, it's even stronger now! Yeah, okay. So, Hitsugaya makes another reference about his height, and Byaki is like, will you fucking just drop it, you stupid little shit? Zaraki gets ready to cut Gerard into pieces, and Hitsugaya stops him, and he's like, look, if you... What happens if we make him bigger, and he falls down? He's like, well, I'll, you know, just cut him up some more then. And Hitsugaya points out, look, this guy is super massive and huge right now. What if he falls from up on this platform and falls on top of the Seirete? It would crush it. And then
Zaraki's like, fuck you.
Gerard tries to step on them, and in the only moment of this chapter that I actually really liked, Zaraki just stops his foot and then just pushes him over.
I've come to the conclusion, Nick, that the worst power you can get is the power to grow really big. Because in no manga I've seen has it been a useful power. Every person is like, I can get really, really big. It's like, I've got really big and fallen over.
Oh. I mean, if Gerard had simply just gotten stronger every time that he was cut down, that'd be one thing. But the size aspect of it doesn't seem to actually really be doing him too many favors, because he's just making himself a giant target.
Yeah.
I mean, he can crush people with his hands and swat them around and stuff like that, but what if he were, you know, super fast and strong instead? Then he could be more precise.
Yeah, like, it seems like anytime someone in these series is super, like, gets really big, you'd assume that the strength would be proportional to it, but there's always some motherfucker at the regular size that's stronger than them and throws them away with one punch, like, ah!
So, Gerard gets back up. He draws his sword, and he says, "Ah, you shall become rust on my Hoffnung." And so Zaraki is like, "Okay, me too." And he unleashes his Shikai, Nozarash. And Byakuya and Hizukai are a little bit surprised by this, I guess. Byakuya points out, "Oh, so his sword was not constantly released as we had theorized. Or no, perhaps a constant release type never existed in the first place." I only draw attention to this one line because someone pointed out to me on Twitter, "Hey, does this mean that they're implying that Zangetsu, Ichigo's sword, had never actually had a Shikai?" Because that was always the explanation that had been given since all the way back when he got his sword powers back, when he fought against Urahara, was that his sword was in a constant release state. And then he used Bankai eventually. So they point out, so does that mean that maybe now that Ichigo's got his Quincy powers and stuff, maybe now he has a Shikai and he has never actually had it? To which I say, well, what difference would that actually make, though? Because he already has Bankai, so the Shikai would be weaker.
Unless if he activates his Shikai, then activates Bankai, maybe it's a different Bankai? Because isn't his Bankai right now actually like based off of Quincy powers or something like that? Or wasn't it based off of a Uobach power to begin with?
Well, we haven't seen his new Bankai.
We haven't seen what it is since he got his new Sanbakuto.
My point is the fact that now that his sword is different, it doesn't matter if his sword was Shikai or in unreleased state up to this point, because he doesn't have it anymore. It's different now. He could have a Shikai with his new sword, and then he could have a Bankai, but who cares? I mean, I don't know.
The question I have is, have we still not seen Zarachi's Bankai then?
We have not, no.
Okay.
So anyhow, Gerard tries to slash Zaraki with his giant, massive fuck you sword, and Zaraki counters it with Nozarashi and hacks it away. And Gerard, is knocked off his balance, and he says, "Ah, you fool! Hoffnung has been chipped!" And suddenly this slash appears across Zaraki's midsection.
So I guess, presumably, his sword follows the same logic? Like, if you wound the sword, it gets stronger in return?
I don't know, maybe.
But that was the end of the chapter, anyway.
This is
a weird chapter. It was uneventful, to say the least. It was a shame, because I somewhat have been enjoying the past few weeks of Bleach, because even if what happens isn't the greatest, it's always usually entertaining to talk about. This is the one chapter I was like, oh, wow, this is really done in like 10 seconds. This is back to old Bleach standard, I guess.
Or nothing happened. Yay. I don't know. I'm assuming that this will lead as set up into the next chapter, but this one was just a little bit confusing at certain points, and not especially noteworthy altogether. So, it happened. Whatever. Let's move on.
Alright. So, we'll move on to chapter, Fairy Tale chapter 479. The one most to be respected is... That's a very Englishy title. Mm-hmm. So it opens up with Xerath in front of his big army, and he's talking to his subordinate, whose name I don't actually remember, because I don't remember a lot of fairy tale characters' names. But the guy's talking about how he's like, you know, we shouldn't underestimate Fairy Tale, because of the Spring and 12, they've already defeated 12. And, you know, Xerath's just thinking of something. Technically, one of them was defeated by Xerath or Actalogia, so whatever. But they're like, hey, it's fine, because as long as we have this dude who never dies, we can't lose. And we then cut back to Lassen.
It's basically like that one speech from The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. The guy is just like, we shall crush the resistance!
Pretty much. We cut back to Jacob fighting against Natsu, and he's basically just beating him up with, like, fucking martial arts styles, which I've only noted because Lucy calls out. He knows martial arts as though that's, like, unheard of. Mm-hmm. But I guess it is technically unheard of. I guess in a world full of magic, why would you learn martial arts unless that was your magic style? But that's his new thing, is he turns invisible and then, you know, martial art punches you. Again, doesn't go for lethal blows. Like, this is the worst assassin in the world. He just goes for, like, I'm gonna punch you in your shoulder a lot. Boom, 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 boom. And he makes the threat. He's like, I remember the 113 members of your guild that I kidnapped. I'm going to kill them all now, one by one. And this is obviously the oddest panel of the chapter, because Natsu has a panel where he's like, no, don't! But he has the weirdest face. Like, his eyes are, like, flattened. It's like, it looks like it's a comedy pose. Like, no, don't! It's odd. I don't know. I wonder if that was maybe supposed to be something else and it got changed to last minute. He's like, all right, fuck, I need Natsu to react to this. I don't know. But, Lucy has a light bulb moment where she's like, wait, aren't Brandish and her subordinate part of the people that you took? And he's like, ah, shit. If I kill Brandish, then, you know, Di Maria would be really pissed off. So he sends Brandish and, I forget his name. Did they actually name him somewhere? Whatever. You are awesome, dude, or whatever. Weird pervert magic-canceling guy. Right. Yeah. So, he comes out, he's like, thanks! And then we see another one. Everyone's like, what? And that's when we see Lucy has released Gemini, and he has, they have rather copied this gentleman, and used his magic-canceling powers to destroy the transportation magic that was used to take all the Fairy Tail guild masters, or guild members away. So in one moment, all the Fairy Tail that was teleported away return all at once. I guess they knew they were coming back because they all, like, reappeared in, like, a badass pose, like, ha!
It would have been much less intimidating if they all kind of, like, were collapsing a heap on the ground.
They're like, ow! We're all like, where are we? So I actually like this, because it actually does show, like, a, you know, strategy from Lucy.
And, yeah, Lucy know, did a smart thing.
She actually had a pretty good plan to do this. Which, of course, my first thought was like, well, this dude just got rid of all these people in an instant anyway. Like, all he had to do was, like, clap and get rid of them. So he tries to do that again. He tries to clap, and I guess this is him blocking it, but he blocks it with his face. So you have Jacob, and he's like, oh, now I have to do it again! You're all going back! A cat?! at which point, Nick, Makarov, of all people, gets really, really big and punches him.
Now, see, the key to this is he punches him and knocks him away, and then Natsu goes to finish him off before he can hit him back.
Yeah, so...
because you just know he would have knocked Makarov on his ass.
Oh, yeah. So, he also makes a comment about, like, you know, how this is respect for the age day. Well, you should be the respecting people the most. He makes a comment about the first master being really old. And she has some lines. She's like, actually, I'm still in my 20s.
Well, not really.
I'm like,
technically... you died when you were in your 20s. / became immortal when you were in your
20s. Yeah. You stopped aging when you were, like, 12. You died in your 20s. And now you're a ghost for, like, the past 100-plus years or whatever. So, you're still old as shit.
You're centuries old, but you're still a lowly. Shut up.
Yeah. So what he does then is he basically grabs Natsu and throws Natsu at
Jacob. He fastball specials him.
Yeah, basically. Fastball specials him, and Natsu activates his Fire Dragon King mode. Which, I swear, this shit sounds more like Digimon every day. Like, it's gonna be like, Fire Dragon King Dragon Burst Mode, activate! and then he punches him with the,
Natsu quote, warped Digivolve, man.
With, quote, Fire Dragon King's Demolishing Strike. And he punches him so hard, he burns all Jacob's clothes off of his body, and wins. So, Fairy Tail has emerged triumphant in the day. Another member of the Spriggan 12 has been defeated. All it took was Makarov punching him and then Natsu punching him to defeat the world's greatest quote unquote magical assassin. So, I like that Lucy got to do, I guess, the turnabout, that she got to show a moment where her, you know, quick thinking got them out of a situation, used the utility of her stellar spirits to a great effect. I just wish this character had a more interesting conflict. It's one of those things where if you create a character whose whole thing is, I'm a great assassin, if you give them the character trait that they fuck around with people because they know how great of an assassin they are, it tends to be like, well, this is just lazy writing to write away the fact this character's one hit kill them. And then when you don't have them do that, then they just look unintimidating and bad at their job. So it was kind of a bad situation to be in from the beginning, but I do wish that Jacob had been a little bit more memorable than what he became, which was just a guy who's like, I'm going to take off all of her clothes, but then I'm going to turn away because I'm really shy too.
Can you imagine if, like, he had actually stuck to combat tactics and he was like, I shall make absolutely certain that you shall die by grabbing you and throwing us both into this spike pit. I guess.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
The Spriggan 12 are slowly getting lamer and lamer as time goes. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, Hydra.
We called it back when they were first coming out. You're like, oh, I'm not so sure about this. And then at first, it was like, oh, this is actually coming out pretty well. You know, Brandish has this whole thing going on, and Wall's pretty bad.
Wall they've taken down once, but it was like, no, that's not him. It's not done yet.
And, I mean, the only one of the 12 that you could really say is like was consistently good up until the defeat was probably Wall.
Yeah.
Really.
He took on, like, 4 members of Fairy Tail, lost to them after they pulled out everything, and he's like, that was a fucking body double, assholes. And then he went Wall, you know, mano a mano with one of Fairy Tail's strongest guild members, and you know, he had an intimidating thing. But everyone else, I mean, there's what, still the Archmage or whatever his name is still out there.
The guy who
like supposedly master of every magic or something like that. And then,
well, then Brad, there's the guy who,
there's Bradman. Don't forget Bradman.
Right, the guy who just has, like, the plague with him everywhere.
Yeah, so there's still some interesting characters out there, but I'm still at the point where I'm like, yeah, I was kind of hoping there'd be more interesting characters in this villain group.
Well, and then there was the guy with all the Dragon Slayer magic with him, and Akmalia was just like, I win.
Yeah, suck it.
Like, well, you could have probably done more stuff with him, oh well. Alright, let's do Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma. Chapter.
I believe, Nick, we should change the series name, though, to Food Wars Shokugeki no Alice.
I mean, maybe for one chapter.
That's all I'm doing. That's all I need in life.
Shokugeki no Alice. Chapter 160, Alice's Feelings. And, interesting little use of this. You remember the color cover from last time of the little kids, Alice and Erina, playing together. Apparently, Alice has that photograph, or had it as a kid.
I do like that. It's actually a really nice touch.
So, last time, Azami had revealed himself in the crowd, and Alice had that big stare down with him.
Oh, Nick, we need to, like, make note of it that the next time we do Weekly Manga Recap Lives, this chapter probably should be in there for Food Wars.
So, the members of Central are all freaking out because they didn't realize that Azami was in attendance. And Rintaro's like, oh, god damn it, why did he have to show up right when I lost? This blows! And there's this awesome moment where Azami just says, I believe I told you to win every Shokugeki. And, what's-her-face side ponytail girl tries to, you know, see, like, oh, but, you know, it was just the one match, and we won every other one, right? And he just glares at her. And he's like, oh, never mind.
Goodbye!
Oh, god, you're so scary, even though you're just a chef with a suit. But yeah, an assistant comes up and says, yeah, out of all the Shokugeki character across 4 locations today, Sentra recorded 32 victories. This was our only loss. But I was like, oh, a win's a win. My Rhea won. And she's gets pretty smug about it by saying that, you know, you have, can you really actually say, that, you know, your way is the ideal one. Your way is, you know, absolutely the best one. Now that you've shown that a member that you handpicked could lose to one of us. And the zombie just kind of, like, brushes that off immediately. He doesn't even address it. He's like, oh, how good to see you. Thanks for taking care of Erina the other day. And that's it. He doesn't talk to about what she actually said at all. He's just, this guy is a fucking politician.
How big's the wall going to be?
Let me tell you something, Alice. You're just saying this because you're upset that your little girlfriend isn't here to comfort you and you need to get to play with her as a little kid. My Erina is the best chef. I choose the best chefs. With the best ingredients, this school is going to be the best. We're going to build an 800,000 foot wall around it, and China's going to pay for it.
China, like, I'm involved. I'm sending the bill to Mumbabwe. Is that even a place? And they're going to be now, and they're paying for this wall. Believe it.
You don't know what you're talking about. You don't.
I'm Donald Trump Naruto now. Believe it. I'm going to be the Hokage.
Who is this Hinata girl? I don't even know who she is.
I've never heard of Hinata before. If she's done anything for me, I haven't been there to recognize it. She died for you. I don't remember it. I may have been there. I don't think I was. If I think I was, I would have remembered it. So I don't think
besides,
she did.
Besides, everyone would want to die for me. I'm the best.
Yeah. When you're Donald Trump Naruto, people die for you all the time. Anyway, send that to Mumbabwe.
So, meanwhile, Erina is riding to the side of the Shokugekis with Ishiki. And apparently, I guess Ishiki was just misinformed about what was going on. He apparently hadn't heard about Alice being involved in the Shokugekis and then immediately wouldn't tell Erina about it. And now, only now, he's actually checking out on records and stuff. It's like, oh yeah, apparently she was the captain of the Cutting Edge Cooking Society and stuff. So Erina is actually kind of worried about her, that maybe Alice will lose, get central, and she's like, oh, you're so concerned over her. I am not! Because Erina, you know, she can't be honest about feeling nice things about basically anyone, because she's so damaged. It's actually kind of sad. Yeah. Erina is, you know, basically puts up her whole Simpson act. Minishiki is just kind of keeping his thoughts to himself about how she actually feels. And, you know, he's just going on and on. He's like, oh, you know, I'm so happy that you're looking out for her. But Erina actually expresses some guilt over the way that she's treated Alice in their recent history. And she says, you know, I doubt that Alice actually has much fondness left in her for me, because of the way that I've been treating her. I guess Erina's not used to seeing the best in people, considering that we're talking about one of the three people who came to her in order to rescue her from her abusive father.
So. She's also looking for reasons to feel guilty and unloved, so.
So, they get close to the Shokugeki while Alice and Azami continue their confrontation. And Azami expresses disappointment in Alice because he thought that she would believe in my utopia of true gourmet. How unfortunate. The Nakiri family has a duty to lead the culinary world of haute cuisine to greater and greater heights. And my revolution is meant to do precisely that. And I was like, I don't care. I don't agree with your methods.
Specifically says, that's the exact words, I don't care.
Yeah, she opens up by saying, I don't agree with the way you're doing this, and I don't want to do what you want to do. So Azami calls her a recalcitrant child.
I love that, because that was the second time I had heard that word in this week, and I was like, what the fuck? Clearly this dude did go to school, because he's got a great fucking vocabulary. Yeah. I'd have been like, what a little annoying bitch shit you are. I hate you so much.
He finally starts to express some real annoyance with her and says, not only did you take my beloved daughter out of my home without my permission, you now dare to backtalk me? That's not very nice. And she just goes, I don't care. Go fuck yourself, uncle.
Basically, it's like one step. I know what you did, uncle, and I will never forget it.
And Arya arrives in the arena as we get to this point in the confrontation. And Kurikiba's perspective of the flashback, which is pretty interesting. So we're not actually seeing into what Alice is thinking during this confrontation. We're just being given context about her history. Kurikiba, back when they were young, and after she had recently discovered him, Alice, you know, was going to write a letter. And we had this detail given to us before, that Alice wrote letters to Arianna, but Azami kept on intercepting them, so Arianna never saw them, and so she never responded to them. But Alice, you know, wrote a letter, and apparently, like, every day, she would, like, oh, do we get a letter from Arianna? Do we get anything in the mail? And, nope, nothing ever arrived. And we see Alice actually getting older a little bit and still continuing to send letters until eventually, you know, the flashback just kind of ends in this really great visual of a zombie, like, sinisterly shredding up one of the letters. And I love the way that Alice puts this, which is,
that made me super duper mad, Uncle Azami. I hate you.
And so she declares that she is going to stand in his way. She's not going to let him get away with anything anymore. And she says that she's not going to let him have his way with the Institute, and she's not going to let him have his way with Arianna. I know that sounds gross. She's not going to let him do what he wants.
Yeah, he's not going to let him control her.
Well, or anyone. Because she hates him. This isn't just about, I'm going to protect Arianna. This is, I'm going to do everything I can to stop you from doing anything you want, because fuck you.
Yeah.
Which is the greatest motivation ever.
I mean, it immediately made Alice the best protagonist in this series right now. Like, the best kind of, like, hero for this story. Because as much as Soma is our main character, as for any good things that Soma does, Soma really doesn't have any stakes in this whole conflict. I mean, he doesn't hate Arianna.
And he always puts stuff in very selfish contexts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's not going to defend the dorm because he wants to help his friends. He's doing it because I like being there. And I like, that's the right, you know, context I need to grow as a chef. So that's why I'm going to protect it. He's not, you know, going to help Arianna because he wants to help her. He's doing it because that's just the way that he wants to do things, essentially. Mm-hmm. Whereas Alice has, yeah, a very personal motivation going into all this. While not betraying the base of her character as we've come to know her through the series thus far.
Yeah, I think it was, it's a fantastic chapter because, I mean, this is essentially the end of the, well, actually there's a little bit more, but, you know, Azami kind of walks away and is like, well, allow me to congratulate you on your single victory. And then, you know, he's walking away. And for the first moment, you see him, like, biting his thumb, and you see a look of tension in his face. You don't know exactly what it is. It almost seems a little bit, like, nervousness, but you can tell that this is the first time in all of this resistance that his central plans have gotten, that he doesn't seem completely in control. Like, it seems like the Alice's words or her actions and that loss actually are affecting him in some way. So it's sort of the first real blow to the Azami Empire that, you know, shows cracks in the foundations.
And you can tell that it must be because of this that he's pissed off. It has it can't be that Sentra lost a match. Because we saw Azon lose to Soma. He didn't react nearly as negatively to that. He was just kind of like, oh, Azon, you know, you better not.
He almost seemed like he expected it in a way.
Yeah. He's like, I expected better things from you. I'm kind of disappointed. And then there was that whole thing with Soma, you know, revealing, oh, yeah, your senpai is my dad. And even that didn't really especially bother him. It kind of threw him off his game, but he wasn't, you know, like going,
can you believe me?
And so after this confrontation, you know, he tells his assistant as he's walking away, you know, summon Kusunoki to my office. I have some words for him. And then you see him chewing on his thumb and stuff. So you get the feeling that Rentaro is going to suffer the wrath that is meant for Alice here.
Mm-hmm.
Rintaro reflects briefly on the fact that there are some really strong first years coming up behind them. And then Erina and Alice cross paths. And Alice seems a little bit surprised that Erina is there. And she's like, did you hear what I said? Okay. And she just walks right past her. And she says, you know, if Uncle Zombie hadn't done all those mean and nasty things, then the two of us could have been far better friends. It makes me kind of mad.
I like this a lot because it's something we just really don't see portrayed a lot in series like this. This is a tangent thought, but one of my favorite horror movies is actually Jeepers Creepers. And okay. One of my favorite reasons for it is because the two leads in it, a boy and girl, their relationship's brother and sister. And usually in those kinds of movies, if you're going to have a male lead and a female lead, they're, you know, romantically involved. So it's always kind of nice to see a horror movie from the perspective of, like, family. And that's why, like, when one of them gets taken, it's really horrific. So, like, in this situation, like, this is a unique relationship. You see two female characters you don't always get. But beyond that, they're cousins, too. Like, usually if you're going to have this, it's like, oh, we're best friends, or we're romantically involved, or, you know, even less common but still shows up every now and then again as sisters. But you very rarely see a relationship between two cousins portrayed in a very strong manner. And I just really appreciate that. I like seeing things you don't see often enough, and, it, you know, I gather that they're cousins who are so close they're essentially like sisters, but it's still that idea of, like, you know, extended family are still family, and this is someone who is incredibly important to Alice, and Erina still obviously cares a lot about Alice, but feels she doesn't deserve to be her friend, and doesn't deserve to have her affection, essentially.
Well, and also the fact that they're cousins allows for the familial connection, as well as the important note that Alice makes, which is, when you're cousins, you can be friends. Mm. When you're siblings, you know, you basically grow up living under the same house, under the same roof, rather. You kind of have to learn to live with each other. Whereas cousins, you can get along better or worse. You know, they're always going to be your cousin, but they can also be really good friends with you. So it kind of allows you to have both, in a way. Yep. So
I like this chapter.
It's a weird thing that Alice says here because it really seems like she does, of course, still very much care about Erina, but the resentment towards Azami is not just in terms of how he has been and is treating Erina. It's because they spend so much time separated, and they're never going to get that time back.
Yeah, he directly impeded upon their relationship with one another by preventing Erina from talking to her for years and years. So, it's great motivation. Again, I, at this point, I'm completely to the idea now of being like, let's just make Alice the lead character here, at least for this arc. She's the one who I've got the most personal investment in, definitely.
Okay. Let's move on to My Hero Academia. Number 84, From Ida to Midoriya. Recapping the conversation from last time, Kirishima and Todoroki had discovered the plan of All Might and the police to try and track down the villains. Yayorozu also has the tracking device that she could give them. But yeah, they are proposing to the whole class, yeah, we're going to go after them. And Todoroki flat says, yeah, you know, Kirishima and I are going to go. So Ida is still pissed off about this. And Shoji steps in with his giant cast. This poor guy got himself seriously fucked up, it seems like. And he says, look, you know, I get what's going on here. I get why Kirishima is, you know, upset that he wasn't able to do anything. Todoroki is upset because Bakugo was taken away in front of him. And I have those same regrets, but we can't let our emotions get the better of us. And Aoyama looks pretty freaked out. And it's like, we should just leave to All Might. Tokoyami says, yeah, I mean, I feel bad that you guys had to actually basically just save my ass repeatedly, but we shouldn't do anything. Asui is on board with that too. So the majority of the class is all saying, like, we shouldn't do this. We should just leave things to the professional heroes. But Todoroki and Kirishima completely undeterred. And Kirishima still stays behind when the whole class is being escorted out by the doctor. He says, look, you know, we're going to do this really soon. We're going to do this tonight. So, I mean, I don't know if you're going to even be able to join us because of your physical condition, but I'm betting that you are hurting more than the rest of us. So he still makes the offer to come along. So the doctor then has a conversation with Deku as he removes his casts, and he says, you took a lot of damage. You got really messed up. You've been injured a lot recently, but the damage this time was really serious. And you see Deku holding his arms out, and there are scars running along his right arm now. And he says, look, I mean, I've seen your charts before. Every single time that you've been injured before, it was as if a firecracker had exploded inside you, which is a really nasty visual.
Yeah.
But he says, people's bodies usually have limiters to keep them from exceeding 80% of their power. But in especially dangerous situations, the fight-or-flight response kicks in, removes those limiters, and enables 100% power output. But the reason we have limiters in the first place is because the body can't take that kind of stress. This incident saw you operating at levels far beyond your capacity for a long duration. The damage to your bones and muscles is significant, but the problem is with your ligaments. They preserve joint integrity. And yours suffer from extreme deterioration. So, if you keep getting injured like this, you may permanently lose the use of your arms.
Here's what I love about this so much. I mean, it does show, like, the weight of what being a hero is. And it's something that certainly is more tangible than a lot of the other stuff. Like, I love One Piece. But they've always mentioned that thing, like, you know, using Gear 2nd and Gear 3 are going to severely, you know, reduce the time of your life. And I'm like, I'm going to make an early call. Probably he's not going to reduce the time of his life past ending the series, you know? Maybe he dies reaching One Piece, but it hasn't shown any real, you know, drawbacks. Whereas we've actually, we've actually seen what this kind of thing can do. Because when All Might isn't transformed, he's a sickly motherfucker who vomits blood everywhere. And you're like, oh, you know, it's a comedy goofy thing. But Deku's slowly reaching that point where he's just going to be a very broken person when he's not using his powers. And maybe even will reach a point where he won't be able to use his powers at all. So it's, you know, kind of nice to be able to see, like, oh, this is, you know, this is something very tense and dramatic about this. And I like it particularly.
The doctor says that mentions Recovery Girl being really upset again, of course. But he also gives him a thank you letter from Kota for saving his life. And although it opens up with, sorry, I punched you in the junk, which is pretty great. The guy says, like, the only real way that you can actually treat this is to gradually build your arms back up. So, yeah, he's like, he basically says, you need to, you know, go through therapy in order to build your strength back up and, you know, not go on an adrenaline rush in order to punch things really hard again. So, we get to night outside the hospital. Kirishima and Todoroki are waiting. And Yayurozi shows up. And Deku shows up as well. Yayurozu, I guess, at this point, still hasn't actually agreed to give them the tracking device. But before either of the two of them say what they're planning to do, Ida shows up. And he scolds them. He says, you guys should know better. And he points to Deku and Todoroki specifically and says, you guys criticized me for my rash actions. You had to receive a special pardon just like me. And now you're going to make the exact same mistake that I did. This is foolish. And he says, you know, like, look, UA has been protecting us. They're already going through some really hard stuff. They're going to have to take responsibility for us doing this. And Deku is like, look, we're not going to, you know, break any laws or anything. And Ida punches him. Just a freaking right hook to the jaw.
It's how men solve their problems, Nick. You're just like, fuck you! I love you too, man!
And he says, look, I'm upset about this too. Of course I'm worried. I'm your class president. of course I'm worried about my classmates, and I'm not just worried about Bakugo. I saw you hurt, and you reminded me of my injured brother. What happens when your little vigilante ad takes you somewhere there's no coming back from, like my brother? Are you saying you don't give a damn? Are you saying you don't care about how I feel? This is an awesome scene. Mm-hmm. Like, this is freaking real. And, yeah, I mean, I really did not expect this much coming out from Ida after the last chapter. I was expecting something along these lines, but not nearly as intense. So,
really. And again, his logic is all completely sound. Like, you completely understand why he feels this way.
So Todoroki says, like, look, we're not going to actually go in there and break down the door and fight everyone we see. And even Kirishima's like, yeah, we're going to be doing this covertly. We're going to do this without engaging the enemy so we don't break any laws. And we're going to rescue Bakugo that way. Something tells me things are not going to go down that way. But it's nice that they're at least being like, yeah, we're going to go into the villain organization and just fight everyone. And Yairozu says that she is going to actually be coming along as to back them up in case things go bad. And Deku says that, I mean, no matter what Ida says, no matter how right he is, he can't sit by and do nothing while Bakugo is in danger. He has to go and save them. So Ida says, okay, I'm going too. Because if he can't stop him, then he might as well help him. And then we get very rapidly two different scene changes to kind of lay the scene. First, we are introduced to All Might's team that is going after the villains. And holy shit! So All Might's there. Endeavor's there. And Best Genist. And I don't even know if we've seen Eggshot before.
He doesn't ring a bell, but he may have shown up at some point. But it's essentially the top five heroes minus number three, who I forget who that is.
They're not pulling any punches on this.
Yeah. And also you can see next to them is, I think, Tiger of the Pussycat Dolls as well.
Those look like it, yeah. Which makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of get revenge for his teammates. So, we...
A strong fucking team right there.
So then we cut to the villain's hideout, where Tamura is sitting in a bar, and they've got Bakugo strapped into a chair nearby. And Tamura's like, alright then, Katsuki Bakugo, won't you join me? And Bakugo says, you can shove that offer and go to hell!
Hey, we know that he's not going to immediately just be like, fuck you, I'm going to join you guys, let's go team villain. Team villain. I like Bakugo being kind of resistive here. And I also like the creepiness of Toma just staring at him the whole time, like, longingly, like, her hands on the counter, like, mm. Creepy person.
Good chapter.
Yeah, very good chapter.
Toriko. Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about Nisekoi this week. Onodera confessed to Raku.
While he's asleep and unconscious, yeah. But, what's her name, saw it, so drama.
Right. So, the dynamic, presumably, between the two is going to change now.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, let's just do, because we don't have any One Piece this week, unfortunately. It's on break. So we're just going to move on to Toriko. A guy gets eaten.
Yeah, I mean, Don Slime's been killed.
It's, that's pretty freaky. Gourmet 364, a thought. Last time Don Slime, after Neo had eaten all of his attacks, was like, okay, if I'm going down, I'm going to take you with me. And he, we thought it was like appetite energy, but he says, this is a star, one that is just on the verge of dying.
I just keep it in my pocket.
And he says that it will make a supernova. So he's going to destroy the planet then. yeah. So he unleashes it and it explodes, and he thinks to himself, Asardi, this attack will be the final move your body can unleash. Thank you. And each of you, I'm coming to see you now.
When I get to the other side, let's share a meal together.
Don't share it!
And then he's... Suddenly, the explosion is gone. Smoke is everywhere. And Don Slam is back to his, like, non-powered-up state, where he's just a little blob with a mustache. And he has eaten the star. Because, of course, he has. And Don Slam, it's impossible! How did you eat the supernova? How can such a creature exist? What are you? And there's a really weird flashback as I guess this happened just before he went to go and fight Neo as they were in Area 6 in the spirit world. And Don Slime tracked down each of you and was like, look, I've replicated your body. You know, I can infuse your soul and eat acacias and full course and you'll be revived. So come with me and you'll be revived. And Adria's like, I'm dead. They can't come back to
life. Bitch, I'm dead.
I'm dead. Let me sleep.
I'm so tired.
And then he pointed out one of Neo's branches, I guess. And he says, something is showing signs of life. For me to be able to feel it, even only as a soul, means it's got quite the powerful appetite energy. Something new is trying to be born. Listen, Slime, since we have infinite time here, I was doing some thinking. Where do guys like us come from? Where are we headed?
What's life?
What is life's purpose? Is it really just food? Is food the only thing worth living
Should
for?
Should I be trying to maybe learn different languages or meeting other people? Should I really focus my entire life around what I eat?
I'm gonna be dead for all eternity. Maybe I should try getting a girlfriend. Or boyfriend. I don't know.
Yeah, I've never actually explored my sexuality in any way, shape, or form. I was too busy trying to find a hair-themed full-course menu, and there weren't many hair-themed drinks for me to find.
He goes on this weird speech about evolution and,
it's a mystery, Nick. Rest in peace, Lemmy.
Hell yeah. Oh, God. Triple H made you sing some weird goddamn songs, didn't he? Yeah. So he says that I can't see the end of evolution, but even so, I hope we can be granted a good transformation so that the next generation's evolution may seat us happily around the dining room table. Evolution doesn't have an end. Like, you don't understand how that works, do you? Don Slime starts eventually getting pulled back, and Ichiru was like, no, I'm not going to come back with you. Bye. And so I guess that was why he had to get Asardi instead. I assume that that's the sequence of events. I don't know. The way the flashbacks worked over the past several months of Toriko, I'm still not sure on the order of some events happening. So I'm sorry if I don't quite get that. Anyhow, Don Slime's head has been eaten. Just see, like, this full-page spread of Neo right in his face, and this whole part of his head has been bitten off, and Neo is chewing it while Don Slime was like, where did you come from?
Why?
This is easily the scariest that Neo has looked to me. You know, it's one thing to be like, oh, and then he died and kept coming back and eating monsters. It's another thing for him to very slowly be eating a sentient being while he screams in agony. And one of the Nitros shows up randomly and is like, he's different from us. That's why he's Neo. Oh, I came to see you just in case, things went wrong, but I see that you're okay now, Acacia. And Acacia pops out of Neo and he's like, is God still not here? Because if you don't hurry up, my appetite will devour you first! Also, Don Slime's dead! Nom 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 nom. The Nitro, reaches behind his hip. I guess he might have some sort of weapon ready. I don't know. But he says, no, it's not yet. Not yet. It's still too early. The Gourmet Eclipse has begun, Acacia! There's someone we need you to defeat, so can you do that? And we cut over to Jiro, who is fighting a bunch of the Blue Nitro. I kind of wish that we got to see more of this scene, because it looks pretty badass. He's just this, super ripped, demonic motherfucker choking Blue Nitro all around him. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, he's trying to convince Keish to go and kill Jiro now.
What'd she do from time to time? It's my job.
It was pretty cool, actually. If there is one way to get me to turn around and the whole Neo looks lame, it's by having him slowly eat someone to death.
Have him eat the characters we somewhat love. Him slowly eating Coco. Oh, my poison does nothing!
Oh, damn it, my one weakness, someone who is immune to every type of poison. Like me! So let's finish up with World Trigger, then. It's chapter 137, which... What is this title? Fuck. Katori Squad! Okay, I got it.
So go fuck yourself, Kakazaki Squad.
Apparently.
You're not important.
Lots of strategy sessions in this chapter. It's a lot of planning and talking between the squads heading into their match. Basically, you get a repeat breakdown of things. Osamu says, like, okay, so Katori Squad is an ace-focused team, like us. So their ace gets most of the points. The other two use their chameleons for support. The other Kakizaki Squad, they don't have an ace. They focus on everybody attacking. They're equipped for close range. They rely on all-rounders. And so there's not going to be any sniping from the opposing squads. Chika is going to be essential as a result of this, but they're probably going to have lots of buildings because they're choosing the map instead of us.
I wish it went like a cut over to Kakizaki Squad. He's like, God, I think we should make it like one big stretch of flat land! And maybe like a giant pit of lava in the middle.
No, I got it! We're going to just have towers a really long distance away from each other.
What about one really big tower in the middle and flat land all around it, and we let Chika start at the top? That's using your noggin.
And maybe
the two are just like, you clearly see like lobotomized laser beam holes in their heads. She's like, I agree.
Yay, my plans are the best.
I'm the smart one.
I love being the captain.
It looks like I'm not such a big old dum-dum after all.
So Kakizaki has chosen the industrial zone in order to do that, and his teammates have memorized the building's location so that they're primed for it. We are introduced to their operator as well, Madoka. She's not a magical girl, though. Kakizaki recalls the conversation that he had with Yuma, which Ko was there and talking with him, and Kakizaki kind of got forgotten pretty quickly. And the operator brings up, you know, you saw Yuma the other day. How was he? Oh, he seems like a nice guy. Well, that explains nothing.
Oh my god, fuck, you're such like the goddamn most peaceable motherfuckers on the planet. One of you throw a pie and get angry at someone.
But he does bring up, oh, you know, he was thinking about getting on the away team. And so, like, oh, well, it's nice to have to aim for that goal. But they're like, well, it's not like we're going to, you know, be going easy on him anyhow. And so they get all determined to win. And then we get the Katori Squad. And this
one thing that's interesting that he mentions. Like, you know, he mentions, like, yeah, he's super nice. And, yeah, he's trying to get J rank. And the female on the team's like, but we're not just going to throw the match for him, right? And he's like, not at all. Because... then he, like, in the thought process, like, this team shouldn't be hanging around this position. And you're like, what does that mean? Like, there's something more to this team. I think going to be like Nasu Squad, there's a close connection that he has with this team. Or more, probably more likely, because he doesn't bring up himself in this. It might be, maybe there's, you know, members of his team that he particularly feels deserve to go higher
maybe
ranks.
Maybe he feels he's not doing his job as captain, which
yeah.
would bring a connection to Osamu.
He's an older member. His two teammates are very young, so it would not be possible.
So then we cut over to Katori's squad room. And their gunner and attacker are kind of like, yeah, yeah, well, rumor has it that, you know, one of them's got a family member or friends got shot by the neighbors. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. And then Katori herself is just sitting on a beanbag chair. And he's like, I don't give a shit.
I thought she was flipping them off at first, because their uniform has this weird design where there's, like, lines going through it, and you just see her glove going down, like, over, like, on top of her lap, and it runs over the line. So I thought she was just flipping everyone off, like with her foot, her hand down there. I was like, "Wow, what a bitch!" And I was like, "Oh, that's not what she's doing." Dot dot dot. Oh, what a bitch!
Still a bitch.
What a real see you next Tuesday.
So, a guy with glasses, Rokuro, says, "I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, if they're really serious about making it to the away squad because of, you know, they're missing friends," and Tori's just like, "I don't care." So your family gets kidnapped and that suddenly makes you A rank? She actually makes a good, pretty good point.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, "Wow, you're being such a bitch, Katori." And Rokuro continues to get on her case. He's really upset that she's not taking it seriously because she's just, you know, fiddling around on her phone while this is going on. You know, got to get that Candy Crush going. And so, yeah. It's really weird because she's very nonchalant about the whole thing. Because she says, because he says, "We can't afford to go down, for our rent to go down anymore." And she's like, "What do you mean? If we lose, it just means we're not capable." Just does not care about it.
See, she's interesting that, like, she makes these points that you're like, yes, okay, maybe you do a point. But then you're like, she's the laziest bitch on the planet. Like, they go into it, they're like, you were like, "Oh, I'm a great attacker." But then you lost the fight. You're like, "I guess I'll switch to gunner." And then you sucked at that. You're like, "I guess I'll be an all-arounder now." Like, you're like, "Oh, she's a bitch. But she sucks, too." Like, she's an ace. But she's like Aegon. Like, she's good at one thing and just doesn't train at all.
Right. And Rokuro says, like, every single time you have a small setback, you just switch. You can't bother to push forward through your failures. And so she gets pretty pissed off for an instant. She just shoots back, "I don't need to hear that from a guy whose gunner rank is below mine."
It's like,
oh.
It's like, wow, you're like the most unlikable person on the planet. Ninomiya was kind of a dick, but you're just a real fucking mess.
And she says, "There's a wall that separates the elite from the rest. It must be hard for someone who's never become masterclass in anything to understand."
Holy, it's like, wow. No other group in Border has had, like, this level, anything near this level of antagonism in the group. They're always, like, best friends who maybe are just slightly, like, I like someone in another group more, so I hang out with them more, but I still, like, I guess the only other one would be Tachikawa Squad. How Tachikawa and Izumi both kind of shit all over their third member, and the fact that right. He's kind of useless and only there because his parents have money. But even then, they're still like, "Hey."
It's an endearing, like, "Ha ha, yeah. You suck, buddy. Go train with Osamu because you're actually roughly his level, even though he's a shitty B rank."
Yeah, but this chick straight up just like, "I fucking hate both of you." One word.
Or even characters that have been portrayed as these extreme jerks. Their squad gets along.
Yeah, like, I want to call him Kuga, but I don't think that was his name, but the sharp teeth guy. Like, he had that kind of intensity, but everyone in his group totally got him and understood him. So, it's definitely interesting there. In my mind, I can't get around the fact it's like, I love how she calls people out, but then immediately is, like, getting called out herself, like, "But you're so bad! Like, you're good, but you just immediately switch! It's like I'm climbing the Hearthstone ladder ranks, and I play Freeze Mage once, I lose, and I'm like, well, I'll just never play this again!"
She shoots down Rokuro, and so he gets really pissed off and starts yelling at her. This goes on for a couple of pages, where he's like, "Yeah, you know, it might have only taken you half a year to become master class, and I spent 2 years working hard. I asked Inukai to teach me how to be a shooter. Yeah, I am still worse than you even after all that, but you're different. You got here without training. Why can't you take this more seriously? Every single time, you just look for a reason not to try your best. You keep on coming up with these excuses. What is this, a wall that separates the elite from the rest? Why don't you actually... You can't say that until you've actually tried to break through that wall." And so, awkward moment of tension, and she throws her phone at his head.
My God. I'm going to tell you right now, my dream chapter next week, because this chapter ends with, like, the fight starting, and she runs towards Yuma. I want the first moment of next week to just be Yuma being like, "Oh, hey!" and just fucking bans her from, like, a foot away as he keeps on running. I just want her to get schooled out of the fight immediately. But
I want her to trip over one of the spiders that Osamu showed.
That's the thing. I feel like it is too perfectly set up that she won't be undone by Osamu's efforts. Because she's essentially the opposite of Osamu.
Right.
You know, she's somebody who anytime she meets a failure, lets her natural talent go to waste because she doesn't want to push through it. Whereas Osamu is somebody with no natural talent who continues to push through his failures to get stronger. So it would only be right if he's the one who kind of shows her, you know, the better way of things. But I really would love it if it just starts with next week and Yuma's just like, bitch, please, wishink!
So there's this mystery in terms of Kakizaki Squad over why exactly they're in this position, why they're, you know, struggling as they are. Whereas the scene makes it very, 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 very obvious why these guys are in this position, why Katori Squad's in this position. And after that confrontation, there's this real moment of tension, and Miura, the third member, is like, oh god, we're in such a bad mood right now. And he looks over to the operator, and he's kind of like silently begging her to say something. And the operator just kind of goes, it's time to start the fight.
I guess she's the one who kind of keeps their shitting together.
I mean, she keeps her shit together, but she's not actually, you know, doing that. You know, she's not actually trying to get the team refocused or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it seems like their squad really lacks leadership. So, but yeah, everyone is sent into the industrial zone. Really cool looking. I like the scene where Chika is looking up at her surroundings as the fight starts up. And Osama gets in contact with Yuma and Chika and says, okay, remember, you know, we're gonna meet, regroup together. And but before Yuma can actually do that...
This is an odd tangent thought right here, but I just noticed that I wanted to bring it up. I never really noticed this about Chika, but I guess it's something I appreciate. When you have a character who's like, I look younger than I am, 90% of the time in anime and manga, it tends to be, I look like I'm 12, but I have the proportions of like a grown person, like a grown woman usually. Whereas with Chika, it's like, I look younger than I am, and I'm like, she actually does look like an actual kid. Like, she looks all fucking stubby and shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Like, in that one shot, I was like, oh, wow, she actually looks like she would have the proportions of what you'd expect, like, a 12-year-old to have. Like, all tiny and stocky and shit.
Right. Also, it's cool to have, you know, as the shortest character, her looking up at the surroundings. So.
She's great. She's like, I showed up on top of one really large tower and a giant empty field around this.
Okay!
Kakizaki's like, I'm the big smart one in the room! Everyone, praise me for how smart I am! Now I'm going to step into this Minefield yield!
And then she's like, oh wait, I still can't shoot people. Damn!
Don't worry, those two are lobotomized. They don't even count as people anymore.
So, Yuma and Katori come across each other, and they immediately start to engage. As immediately, Katori kind of abandons the plan of, oh, let's all meet up together, but they're like, I'm gonna take that guy down. So, here we go. So, back to the Rank Wars. It's been a little while now.
I like it. I like the way they're setting up. We can kind of see from the map maybe the way some things will go. We see Osamu and Yuma are pretty close, with Chika kind of diverting in kind of close to them, but there's the female member of Kakizaki squads over there, so I would like to see maybe Osamu sets up a trap. Maybe that female member is the one who takes him out quickly or something like that, but he's already put his trap into motion, helps Yuma get the win, kind of shows maybe why those are the two members should be higher than where they are. I don't know. I'm pretty excited for this. I want to see where this keeps going, and I'm pumped. This was a great chapter. This is a necessary chapter, but getting back into the fight is exactly where I want the series to be.
All right, we've had a pretty short conversation this week, so I want to actually make a note of something that we kind of passed over because we skipped over Nisekoi. There was a character popularity poll that the results were released. Nisekoi's character popularity polls are always weird in terms of the results. So, there's that whole thing over the guy from Chiba Prefecture who keeps on voting for Marika.
Mm-hmm.
He ranked 19th. A fan ranked ahead of the artist of the series. Oh, God.
I want to know what fictional characters he actually ranked above.
Let's see. There was Melusha, the Chidage lookalike. Onodera's mom. Cloud, as in Tsugumi's boss, you know, Shitoge's bodyguard.
Oh, okay.
Raku's father.
Oh, Cloud's actually a pretty big one. That's the one I'd be embarrassed to be.
Well, he's like the one consistent antagonist the series has, so. Ruri's grandfather. God, there's a bunch that I don't even recognize. There's a guy who is a member of the gang that Raku is a part of. I don't know. But yeah, it's just so weird to see this, like, that one random asshole who kept on sending in way too many poll results for Marika is ranked on the popularity list. But even stranger than that, number 10...
the character doesn't even exist in
music. He's not in the series. It's from the last series that Koei Nahoshi wrote.
And she's out of fucking Raku.
She just, like, pops in the bottom of the panel and just the word bubble and says, what am I doing here? Like, now what are you doing here?
They did, I believe...
She's ranked ahead of Shu!
I do believe that they reran the Double Art series, or at least the opening chapter, relatively recently in Jump, I feel like. So maybe that's part of the reason why it happened. But it is just unique... by and large, that she garnered enough the votes to overtake Raku in the poll. And I guess it makes sense for a poll like this in a harem series. I guess most readers would probably write in their favorite, you know, option, favorite female character. So maybe that's why, but I just find it extremely odd that a character from this dude's last series that was still like 8 years ago managed to get 10th in the popularity poll.
Oh, let's go over this real quick. So, the first six, it's like, okay, yeah, I can see that. So we got Chitoge, Kosaki Onodera, Tsugumi, Marika, which is unusual to hear that low. Maybe they eventually figured out how to not count votes from the same person, and this is her true rank. Haru, Ruri, Yui, which is like, I guess some people did like her. And then it gets to, like, Marika's mom. Haru's friend.
I was like, who the fuck is Fu? I was getting angry. I was like, who's Fu?
Freaking character from the last series. Then Raku. the top five, six girls, the top five girls, like, get over 1,000 votes. Raku barely gets 150. The main goddamn character. It's like, well, this is why people in Japan read this series. It had nothing to do with you, asshole. Oh, God.
For some reason, there's like a pig that also got ranked 28th. I don't know who that is.
I don't know what that is. The guinea pig? I don't remember that at all.
Well, he was very popular. He managed to get over Migisuki Aiba. So.
I don't even remember. Who the fuck is that? Like, I mean, of course, it gets past Raku, and then it's like, okay, all of these must have, like, less than 150 votes.
People are saying it's a capybara, but it doesn't look like a capybara. But how many fucking Sonya Jump series have capybaras in it?
It just shows up in every single one. The next straw hat's going to be a capybara.
I'm all for it. The next Food Wars chef is a capybara. They're like, I'm the new ninth seat. My specialty... I fought in your food before they delivered to the table to be served. Like, I hate you, capybara chef!
But there's like... And then it gets even weirder if you look at the we also got votes for section, where they don't even bother showing pictures. It's just... like, we got like one vote for this random suggestion. So here, Chika Tachibana when she was in high school. Ruri's underclassman friend. Shu's glasses.
The scientist type with the bushy hair from the Beehive Lab that is pictured in the table of contents page for volume 12.
The upperclassman in Nisekoi Yomaimin, the PlayStation Vita game, who got mad after Raku stepped on his good luck charm.
The Mikaku on the fan that Yamada is holding onto in chapter 155, second page, third panel.
Magical chocolatier Haru from that one weird spin-off. Haru when she was little reading the picture book. Haru's bear underwear. Tsugumi's ribbon. the older guy who was supposed to marry Marika.
The guy who we didn't even see his face, did we?
Yeah, no, we didn't. Oh, we did? Okay. That's got to be some big reveal or something. It's like, nope, never show his face.
That's right, we did get to it. Yeah.
Gori Raku, a.k.a. Raku's weird face in Chapter 199. The Mikako on that fan that Yamada is holding in Chapter 155, second page, third panel. This is fucking amazing. Oh, God. I love whenever you get to those really random things in character popularity polls, but this has got to be the weirdest one that I've seen in Shonen Jump. I haven't seen a tremendous amount, but this was really weird. So, and amazingly, it's more notable than anything that happens in this big, important, romantic confession chapter of the series. So, just want to make you know that. But that's it. We're actually done. It turns out when we don't have One Piece to talk about, we don't go for especially long. So that is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you guys for joining us here on hitbox.tv/royalt. We tend to record the show here Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change things up. So be sure to follow us on Twitter for updates. You can follow the official at WMR Podcast, and you can also follow your individual hosts at Why Are We Worth Time, at RLOT. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We, a couple days ago, did a movie commentary on the second Sailor Moon movie. It's a weird movie. It's a very strange movie.
Yeah, it'll be up very soon. That'll be for everybody. You don't have to be a Patreon to get it. You just have to visit the Patreon website, patreon.com/weeklylongrecap.
And if you do feel like pledging a couple of dollars a month, we would be more than happy to receive that. We are very grateful to all you guys who help us out.
Yes, a special thanks to David Ramsey and Alex Yeo, who are our most recent Patreons. Thank you very much. It is a huge help. And if you haven't been a champion Patreon, you don't know what next month's bonus podcast is going to be. We've got some cool things planned next month to kind of do a little bit of like a theme month for April, because I hate April Fool's Day, but I do like the idea of like a comedy-centric month, so we're kind of going to do that for April. We're going to have some more comedy-themed stuff. We're going to do a comedy movie for our movie commentary next month. We're going to have some fun segments and games and things like that, and our bonus podcast for next month is actually going to be a roast of Naruto, as done by various characters from Shonen Jump, all kind of making fun of each other and having a lot of fun. So that'll be the bonus podcast for next month if you're interested in catching that.
Be sure to also check out our past episodes. You can find them on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. Also on iTunes, be sure to search for Weekly Manga Recap. And also you can subscribe to us on YouTube if you're watching the recorded video version of this. And if you do happen to listen to us on iTunes, you know, make sure to leave a comment, leave a rating. You can do that on YouTube, too. You know, leave a comment and a thumbs up. And, of course, you know, if you leave a comment, you leave a rating on iTunes, that pushes us up the ranks and helps us beat the woodworkers.
Someone has to do it. Every day. Guys, look, we're in a dark age now and today. Batman and Superman are fighting each other. They're joyless. They're angry. There are Overwatch characters with far too sexual poses that are causing the degradation of society that we know it, apparently. And we can't deal with that. We need you guys to come together and give us 5-star reviews.
I don't even know what that second part has to do with anything.
I just wanted to talk about it.
Over-sexualized poses? What are you talking about?
Have you heard of the game Overwatch?
No.
It's a Blizzard game with, like, kind of like TF2, but with, like, League of Legends-esque characters, essentially. Like, unique characters as opposed to just titles. And there's one character who's kind of like their flagship character, who's, like, a little British chick who, like, goes, like, she has, like, time-warping powers, essentially. And her victory pose was, like, a shot of her from the back and, like, a little bit of a hip cock and then her looking over her shoulder, and somebody was like, I'm not cool with that because you've over-sexualized this character. It doesn't make sense. So Blizzard's going to change it. There's a lot of people kind of, you know, angry that it's happening because they feel like it, you know, it was too sensitive and you know, you shouldn't be changing one thing for one person to complain, and there's other people being like, it's sexualized. I'm firmly on the camp, though, of like, I'm glad they're changing it because that pose is stupid as shit. Like, it's that pose that no one ever does in real life where you're right. Like, I'm going to look up. Let me try to angle this exactly. It would be like, I'm like, hey, Nick, I just won. Good job, me. Is this pretty cool, right?
It feels like you should be looking the other way.
Yeah, like, it's like that pose that no one ever does where you're like, I'm going to look over my shoulder.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that.
Anyway, 5-star reviews, guys, on iTunes. We need it.
Special thanks to Steve Maritakaris. You can check out his work in a bunch of different places. Special thanks to Infamous Planet for helping us out in a number of different aspects of the show. And finally to Felix Stark for those visual editions of the episodes that you can find on his YouTube. So, next time, hopefully, we're going to be having a Shinsuke no Iron Maiden. It's going to be a weird episode, I think. So be sure not to miss that.
We didn't do MVPs, though, did we?
No, we didn't. Unha is dead, never coming back. So, let's do that now. I think we'll start with MVPs. Mine... It was kind of hard, because I thought about Alice. I thought about even doing Neo. But I gotta go with Ida from My Hero Academia. He doesn't do an incredible amount this week, but it was a very powerful short exchange that he had with Deku and the others. And it's nice to see that, you know, he was really affected by that thing that we thought was going to affect him more than it ended up affecting him. You know, like he would be crippled or something along those lines. But it has had a long-standing impact on him, and, you know, he's completely right about his points, even though he's going along with them now.
And what's your MVP? Because I feel like mine might just mirror yours.
That was my MVP.
Oh, sorry, your series of the week, then.
I'm not sure.
All right, well, I'll tell you mine. My series of the week is My Hero Academia. For a lot of the same reason you mentioned, I love Ida's beat with Deku. I love the insinuation we might be getting that Deku's arms are beyond repair. I like that it's kind of this collective of different characters within the Class A group who all are kind of doing this for their various different reasons. We know why Deku's going to be doing this, but we're also seeing Kirishima's doing this because he's feeling guilty about not being able to do anything, and Ida doesn't want the other classmates to fall in the same role, and Yayorozo's trying to be responsible. Like, I like seeing all these characters kind of band together and all the kind of relationship that was built up through that chapter, and then just the cool teases at the end I thought were really effective. My character of the week was Alice. I think that she really stood out in the best possible way. It was immensely enjoyable seeing her finally stand up to Aizami. That was probably one of the most exciting things to happen this week, was seeing Aizami finally get taken down just a little bit of a notch, enough to see, like, alright, you're not 100% in control. And I really enjoyed that. I'm completely behind Alice at this point. She may be my favorite Food Wars character, Nick.
I'm also going to go with My Hero Academia. I think that overall it was a more solid chapter than Food Wars was. So I gotta give to that, because the stuff not involving Ida was also really good. I can definitely see Alice, and like I said, you know, I was very close to choosing her, but I don't know. Ida did less, but what he did, you know, made struck a bigger impact on me. Yeah. The audience has chosen Food Wars, though, and I think that is a very valid choice this week.
Now, I'm not sure if it's because there is no One Piece, but there are some votes in series I don't usually see. 4 votes for Fairy Tail, 1 vote for Bleach, 1 vote New Sekoi. These series that I usually don't see gain a lot of votes at all.
They're like, what do I do? I don't have One Piece.
No One Piece. I guess I'll click. Like, just close your eyes. Like, Fairy Tail's kind of like One Piece. Click. Alright. Well, that's it.
That's that.
Also, if you go to Infamous Planet's YouTube page, he just posted up a visual version of the latest, or most recent, I guess I should say, by World Trigger fanfic, World Trigger My Heart and Backdoor. So if you care to watch that and see Nick and Annalisa reading the parts of Osamu and Kitora in my god-awful, horrible fanfiction that had Annalise screaming awful things when her husband came home, you can check that out there. But that's gonna do it, guys. I'm trying to think of something wacky or funny I can have us go out on. Grandma's peach tea. It doesn't make sense unless you see Batman versus Superman.
Okay, I believe you.
Yeah, goodbye!